Blog Talk Radio.
Hello! Hello, everybody! Welcome! Welcome. It's Thursday night, my favorite night of the week. Tonight is, of course, this is another reality show, and I'm your host, Golden Hawk, and gosh golly, let's all take a breath, because what a week it's been. I don't know about for you guys, but it's been quite a week for this Golden Hawk, and just going to center myself and take a nice big deep breath. Place ourselves right smack in the center of now. Because, you know what, there's really nothing else but now. Whether it's chaotic, whether it's centered, it really doesn't matter. It's just now. I have a few updates that I want to say. First, what I want to do, though, is, because I'm finding a lot of self-empowerment, what I've been doing lately is inviting our essence into everybody who's listening, whether they're listening live or whether they're listening to the archives, it's all now, it doesn't matter. So let's all take a few deep breaths. And invite our essence to join us in our physical beings. To blend and become part of the experience of the third dimension. We are clearly in a space where, I mean, personally, it's almost a joke that I'm calling this the third dimension. This dimension is gone multiple. It is a multiple experience for me on a daily basis, and I absolutely give the credit to the fact, at least partially anyways, that I have been inviting my essence to be in my physical being. I let my essence know, experience this world with me, because it wants to know what density is like. And it's okay that it's turbulent. It's okay that it's, you know, the waves are rocking and rolling. It wants to be here now, because this is the end of the big cycle. We are literally effortlessly moving out of separation experiences back into unification experiences. Everything in the cosmos is supporting this. So by inviting your essence in, it's almost like you're just letting the river flow. You're flowing with the river instead of going upstream feeling like you have to do this all by yourself. You have a tremendous, tremendous guide and, oh my God, everything. You have a guide, a lover, a teacher, a parent, a caregiver called your essence that wants to do this with you, is waiting to do this with you, and the invitation simply allows it to know that you're ready to have your own essence come in and experience this experience with you, this dimension with you. It's really quite, it's quite a fabulous trip, because, I mean, I was listening to an Osho video. Actually, I was listening to several Osho videos. I don't know if you're familiar. Osho is a mystic from India this morning, and I was kind of in and out of dream state and sleeping, and but not really going too deep, because I knew I had to work a couple hours later. And all of a sudden, I had a multiple dimensional experience where Osho's presence was in my bedroom, and he was sharing insights with me directly. Now, that in and of itself is an amazing experience, absolutely. The part that really confirms it for me is my father, who sleeps across the hall from me, confirmed it. I mean, like, he was like, who was here this morning? And I went, oh, my God. Well, you know, how do you explain to a 76-year-old engineer retired, Osho, a dead mystic, showed up? So, of course, I kind of just chuckled and said, oh, nobody dead, you know, just a mystic, you know, wanted to share some insights with me while I slept. But it was truly an amazing experience. These are happening on a daily basis for me, whether it's the trees that are speaking with me or mystics that have transitioned. It's part of my essence. It's the expanded perception of who I am. So that's one of the things I want to share. The other thing I want to share is I came on Blog Talk Radio. I started doing shows on Blog Talk Radio April of 2009. And I had a huge milestone. June of 2010, I hit 10,000 listens to my radio show, and I was super excited about that. I mean, I just felt really good that, you know, it's well received. You guys like the show. And what I started doing after that is I went, you know, I'm not going to check the numbers every week. This isn't about numbers. This is about presence and energy and healing. And today, just out of nowhere, I was like, oh, let me go check the numbers. From June 2010 to September 2010, 5,000 people or 5,000 hits have turned on an archive of my show. So what took me, I don't know, approximately a year and a half or a year and a couple of months to do happened in 3 months. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. I am honored. I am blessed. This is absolutely my passion, to speak on all things spiritual, to support all of us who are going through the transition in a way that says, A, going crazy is affirming, yes, but it's a good affirming. And B, you know, it's okay to be self-expressive. Express yourself, express yourself. Madonna had it down. Express yourself. It is absolutely healthy, creative, and I encourage it. So thank you very, very much, everybody out there who has been clicking on the archives and listening to the shows, and I'm really touched by that. Okay, let me take a breath. Okay, it's going to be an amazing night. I have Gary Willing with me tonight. And you know what? Just let's welcome you to the show. Welcome to the show, Gary. Thank you for being patient while I made my announcements.
Wow, now I'm nervous. 5,000 hits. I thought it was just you and I on the phone for a while.
Listen, you were part of that. There was, I think, on the show we did last time, 200 hits. 200 hits in the archive of that show alone.
Wow.
Yeah, I think people are definitely, you know, they want to know from a reassuring point of view that stepping out of the box, so to speak, is all right. And you definitely bring that to the table, my friend.
Well, yeah. I mean, I said one of my pastimes was talking to people until they just wanted you to shut up and go away, you know. Yeah, you have
no.
to step out of the box sometimes.
I want you here. I love that. And you have saved my butt on several occasions, my friend. And I appreciate that, too.
Oh, sure. Well, my pleasure always, actually. It's been
Oh, thank you. Ditto. I enjoy our talks very much, and I'm super stoked that, listen, the whole 2 hours, well, of course, 1 hour and 52 minutes is ours. Because you have some fascinating... Pardon?
No, go ahead. I said not a recorded version of Ben. This is great. So, yeah, so we'll fill it up for 2 hours, you know. No problem.
Exactly. No problem between me, you, and, you know, all the energies that are floating around. I never worry about, you know, the shows. Never. But, so listen, well, first of all, and I definitely want to hear personal experiences. When you said that prior to coming on the air tonight, I'm down, love it, because my whole show is about personal experiences, because I think the sharing of that is what's helping people. I think people all over the planet are having personal experiences, but they're afraid they're alone in those experiences. And us being willing to talk about them on the air, you know, whether they be miraculous or just, you know, even just you slice open an apple and you see an angel, so to speak. Everything, the experience is real. Everything else is an illusion. And that's what I'm learning on this planet. So let's share the experiences so people do get more comfortable becoming multiple dimensional beings. You know, I mean, we already are, but we're becoming aware of it. But I just want to know, do you have any updates? Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with Benjamin Krem and Maitreya. So I'm just, well, if there's any, you know, big news from that end, it would be great to just share that here.
Well, how about if I kind of just, you know, cover a few, you know, bits and pieces of it and kind of bring us up to where we are right now, if that's okay. You know, maybe somebody had not heard the show or something, so they, you know, we're not coming in on the middle of a conversation. Is that okay, or...
Oh, of course. However you want to follow your heart, my friend. Follow your heart.
Okay. Yeah, there's not too much you know, in terms of, you know, like up to date news, you know, since the last time we spoke. But really, I came across this information unexpectedly, actually. I had known about the Masters. When I was in high school, I read, the first book I read was Yogananda. It was autobiography of a yogi. And that book really changed my life, because he, talk about personal experiences, one of the things that he did was he talked about meeting all these different yogis and gurus in India, and he lived 80, 90 years ago or so, and brought all this information to the West, and it was quite new to a lot of people. You know, now the New Age movement is, you know, gaining momentum more and more and more. You know, at the time, people were kind of shocked about it. You know, so if you ever get a chance to read that book, An Autobiography of a Yogi, I definitely recommend it.
Okay.
It seemed very honest, because he was also talking about his own discovery within himself, you know, and his faults here and there. And, like, one was his lack of discipline in school. He didn't really like to study. So he had a hard time, you know, making the grades, so to speak. But, and then I came across, I actually had a music teacher. I'm a musician myself. And for the first year or so, we were just playing music. And I didn't really think anything of it. And then I came across this book, and we started talking about it. And he was familiar with this book. And he turned me on to Alice Bailey. And the first book I read of hers was The Initiation, Human and Solar. And she talked about the Masters of Wisdom. And that book blew my mind. Because at the time, I knew there was something deeper than what I was getting in the churches, for instance. You know, I was raised Methodist, and nothing against, you know, the Christian church. It's just, it didn't really have the ring of truth for me. There was more that I saw that was out there, you know, within myself, you know, and rather than just looking at it as the dogma of the church, you know, I was like, well, there's got to be something greater than this. You know, it's just, something just didn't seem right. And so when I read this book, she talked about these Masters of Wisdom, and who these Masters of Wisdom are men and women like us that have gone ahead of us in evolution and have become perfect. You know, we call them masters. They're not masters over you and I. They're masters over their own being, and really master people. You know, what we're still trying to master within ourselves. You know, all the struggles and all the problems, and, you know, I mean, there are people who have had harder life than mine, you know, but each one of these masters have lived every aspect of human existence, the good, the bad, the ugly. They've been the recipient of, you know, harm. They've inflicted harm on others and learned the lessons, that the painful lessons of not doing that, and then eventually got to the point, and they moved their way up the ladder through all that pain and suffering and reincarnation over and over and over again, to where they truly live harmlessly. And this is what Alice Bailey was talking about. And then she went into some of the work. She just touched on it very briefly, as some of the work of some of these masters. And it really just sparked my imagination to where I was just really, all I wanted to do was read this. So for the next 2 years that I took bass lessons from my guitar teacher, we hardly ever played. We were just talking about, you know, about this thing. So I, you know, I had an idea of what it was, you know, but looking back on it, it was just the beginning phase of it. It was a lot of things that were missing. So then I came across a gentleman named Benjamin Krem. Mm. And I kind of stumbled across his book at a bookstore here in Atlanta. And at first I read the book. I didn't like it. That was like, who is this?
Which book was it? Do you remember
it
which
was,
one?
My Transmission Volume 2.
Okay.
And
okay.
So
I've got them all.
I picked it up, and the first thing I did is I saw that picture of Maitreya in Nairobi, Kenya. And my first thought was, I've seen this guy somewhere before. There was something about his eyes that looked very familiar to me, but I didn't know. It was almost like trying to place somebody that you have seen in a store. Like, where have I seen that person?
Right.
And so I bought the book, and I took it home, and I didn't like it. And I've even told Mr. Krem that. He kind of laughed. And I put the receipt back in the book, and I was going to take it back to the bookstore and just say, to heck with it, right? So something prompted me to read it. I think there was nothing on TV that night, or I can't remember what it was. And I just, let me just read it. And I started to read it and read it and read it, and I literally did not put that book down. There was not a day that went by for over a year that I didn't.
Okay, so wait a minute. Let me interrupt. So, in other words, what you didn't like was the picture, not the content.
No, it's the other way around.
I'm a little confused when you didn't like it, but that's okay. Like, because I read the book and I'm going, wow, he doesn't like the idea of an enlightened society, and I'm not going to say anything. Let him unfold the story.
Well, no, it's just, you know, some of the greatest and most significant things in my life I've resisted at first, and
indeed,
so that's
I
why.
Yes.
Yeah, and so I absolutely have no qualms or, you know, anything when somebody, you know, when I'm talking to them about this and they have a tremendous amount of resistance to it or whatever, I really understand it because I didn't have a context to put this in. Even though I knew something about the Masters, for some reason, it rubbed me the wrong way. I think it was maybe the delivery of the message was just so to the point. Now when I read it, it's so simple. Everything was just simplified that I was like, wow, that makes a lot of more sense than reading, you know, trying to understand Alice Bailey stuff can be quite difficult, and trying to understand HPB or Helena Blavatsky's work is even harder than that. So anyway, but what Mr. Krem was kind of saying, he's kind of bringing up to date what Alice Bailey had been talking about, these masters. In the Alice Bailey works, she talked about the masters eventually coming into the world. One of the masters that worked through her was the master Jual Kahul, or DK, or also known as the Tibetan. And he said that Maitreya would eventually come back into the world around the last quarter of the 20th century, so around the mid-1970s to then. I don't know where they've read this, but the people who follow Alice Bailey's books to the letter think that Maitreya will be coming back in 2020. They don't believe what Mr. Krem is saying. So when I was reading this book by Benjamin Krem, he had said that the masters had already started to come back into the world. I was like, wow, that's pretty deep. And so he said that in 1977, July 19th, so just a little bit over 33 years ago. In fact, I think when we had our last interview, it was around the 19th of July, like something like that, the 23rd of July.
It was, indeed. Yeah. Anyway, it was in July, yes.
Yeah, so it was around that anniversary date. So, you know, kind of a, you know, I'm sure most people didn't think much of that date when it happened. I don't really remember the 19th of July, 1977. But,
right.
Maitreya had, well, according to, let me go back even farther, I'm sorry. According to the Ageless Wisdom teachings of Alice Bailey, there's been several great civilizations that have sprung up and then were eventually, you know, destroyed, and then there was a new civilization came up. The first great one was the Lemurian civilization. And then that ended, and then a new civilization was built called the Atlantean civilization, or Atlantis. Most people are familiar with that. It is, according to Mr. Krem and Alice Bailey and HPB, it did exist. There was a continent in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean called Atlantis, and the masters worked openly into the world, and the technology was given to humanity by these masters at the time. They just gave them the technology. And so humanity really didn't have a lot of experience with it. So they just kind of, you know, they just kind of followed with some of the masters.
They kind of blew themselves up. I mean, let's be honest.
I don't have any experience to really say it. I'm just going by book knowledge.
Well, in other words, it sank. Whatever they did, they went out of balance someplace.
Exactly. Now, what they went out of balance with is they started to become, humanity started to become more and more materialistic. And started to be used, there's actually a group of highly evolved beings, like masters, but on the opposite side, on the dark side, so to speak. They have all the capacities of masters, but they have no compassion. Their heart chakra is not open at all. And so there was a time right around the destruction of Atlantis that humanity was being used equally by, you know, there was half of humanity was responding to these masters of wisdom of the time, and then half of humanity was responding to the lords of materiality, as the masters referred to them. And there was a great war, and it ended in a stalemate in the destruction of Atlantis. And it's predicted in the, it's actually depicted in the Bible as the flood, the great flood.
Mm.
And so, and I often thought if the Tower of Babel is, I've never confirmed this with Mr. Krem, but I always wondered if the Tower of Babel was a symbol for Atlantis too, where humanity was trying to build itself up, you know. So humanity was kind of dispersed. The technology kind of, you know, was hidden away. A lot of the inner knowledge of how to use thoughts were, you know, eventually humanity started to lose that ability to do that. And brought us to the point where about 60 or 70 years ago, whenever it was, when World War II came up, these great forces, the forces of light, the forces of darkness, that great war of, you know, the World War I and World War II came up. And it was a clear depiction of the forces of light, or those who were fighting for the greatest good that they knew of, which was the Allies. It's not necessarily like the Allies were that great a people, but they were a lot better than, you know, the Nazis and all the other guys, right? So the Nazis were being, especially Hitler and some of his groups around him, the fascists in Italy and some militarists in Japan, were being used by these forces of materiality, the forces of darkness. And so there was that great war of World
War. Okay, so wait, let me interrupt for a sec. So in other words, because I, you know, I'm familiar with the Benjamin Krem work. I'm not familiar per se with the Alice Bailey, but let's just stick with Benjamin Krem in the sense of,
sure.
Benjamin Krem has talked about that in Jesus' last 3 years, Maitreya came in and was overshadowing, you know, Jesus of Nazareth's physical body, hence giving him, like, the radiance, so to speak, of a Christed being. So it's kind of similar to that, except it would be the lords of materiality kind of overshadowing these darker souls, or... Okay, right?
That's actually extremely accurate. The one thing to add to that is the forces of darkness do not respect human free will, where the masters never infringe human free will. So when the masters overshadow somebody like Mozart, or Mozart was overshadowed by his master, and a lot of the compositions were, you know, were given to him the same way that the teachings of Maitreya were given to Jesus and those kind of things, they never infringe upon the disciples' free will. Where Hitler opened himself up to be obsessed by two lords of materiality. That's why there was a time, if you saw Hitler during the day walking around, you know, there were people filmed him, you know, petting dogs, and he was very nice, and he would pet kids, he would pat children on the head and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then when he would stand in front of the people, he would just, you know, he was obsessed. And that also gave him the power to inspire a nation to try to take over the world. It's a very destructive energy. And,
okay.
But it was sent out deliberately to destroy the old order. And where a lot of fundamentalist Christians have problems with what Mr. Krem is saying is it's a misinterpretation of Revelations. Revelations about the beast 666. And so they're still awaiting the Antichrist to come out. They think the Antichrist is an individual. And there's all these different misinterpretations. If you go online and you type in Antichrist, you'll get all sorts of different people. Some people thought Ronald Reagan was the Antichrist. Some people think...
I don't think the Republicans thought that, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some people think Barack Obama's the Antichrist or could be the Antichrist. A lot of people think Maitreya is the Antichrist or could be the Antichrist. It was Hitler. It's an energy. It's an ancient evil that's sent out to deliberately destroy the old ways of relating, and the old ways of doing things. And so it was the first beast that St. John predicted to come up in Revelations was actually Nero, the emperor of Rome at the time of the life of John when he was exiled on that island. And so that's the first beast. And then the second beast that was let out was through the, like we were just talking about, through the Nazis, you know, the Nazis and the Italians and the fascists and the militarists in Japan. And so it will be chained down for a time and a half and so forth. And I, you know, it's funny because, not funny, haha, but it's funny that to note that one of the masters, DK, the master DK, in one of his books talked about when the state of Israel was created, it caused such a disharmony in the world and in the peace of the world after World War II that the forces of materiality used that as a use that to their advantage. And it was almost like the door was closing on them at the time of the end of World War II. And he said it was as if they stuck their foot in the door to keep it from closing on them. So that ancient
Who stuck the foot? The masters?
The masters of evil stuck their foot in the door.
Oh, the material masters.
Closed.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. And it rematerialized again, but at a lesser level, but it's still there. There's a point of darkness at the Pentagon. There's a point of darkness in Eastern Europe around Yugoslavia. And then the strongest point of the darkness is in Israel. And so those three points are still working to humanity's detriment at this time. But, so that evil's still there, but it's hindered, you know, but there's still kind of flares up and the Pentagon still does their thing. You know, but they're responding to that evil that causes causes this.
I just want to make a note, because I have listeners from Israel. That this is Gary Willing's particular strand of experiences. I'm very pro-Israel, and I just want people to know that, how do I put this? Everybody has a perspective. I honor all perspectives. And I don't want anybody to think that another reality show is saying Israel is negative base to be. Because these are perspectives from metaphysical experiences. And I'm a personal believer that you choose the frequency. Even if you lived in the darkest area of Dante's caverns, if you choose the frequency of unconditional love, in my personal opinion, and my listeners know, I walk a dark path myself. It's not protection in the sense of protecting you from anything outside of you, because I just believe that you choose your own frequency through free will, and in that choice, what you attract to you, whether it will help or hinder you, is on your choice of whether you're choosing unconditional love or judgment and separation. So I just wanted
to. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I'm not trying to.
I know you're not. Speak your truth. I have no problem with this. I'm telling you, I'm in a dark space lately. I told you. I mean,
it's just like living in a
dark space. It's all good. Let's talk about it. Let's not talk about it. Let's talk about it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like what you're saying. I mean, they're. You know, just because you live in Washington, D.C., doesn't mean you're necessarily going to respond to this evil. If you are susceptible to that, like Hitler was, then of course you'll respond to it. You know, and
susceptible is the choice, though. I'm a firm believer that
I promote. Absolutely.
You choose your frequency. Because I can name you, Viktor Frankl lived in a concentration camp and came up with the new logos of beauty based on his experiences in the concentration camp. So people can have very hard experiences and still choose unconditional love and beauty. It is choice. It is choice. It is choice. Okay.
Couldn't agree more. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And then, you know, once you choose it, like, you know,
you'll experience it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean
well,
to.
I don't want to go off on that. No, that's okay. I don't want to go off on a tangent anyway, but I kind of went off on a tangent on it. But so, where were we? Oh, so these masters, according to Mr. Krem, these masters, are right at the end of World War II, Maitreya made an announcement that through Alice Bailey that he himself was coming back into the world far sooner than anybody had ever expected to come back. It was hoped. Around before World War II, actually, it was hoped that the masters actually thought it would be another 1,200 years from now. So you're talking, you know, 3,000 something
AD. Right.
I mean, it's a long time away. I mean, Star Trek was actually what 2,400 AD. You know, so you think the technology of
that was post-Star Trek.
You know, yeah,
that's
exactly.
A good analogy.
So,
yeah. Okay.
You know, it's far into the future that humanity would be ready and capable of, you know, learning from these masters. But at the end of World War II, because of the invention of the atomic bomb and humanity's ability to destroy themselves, the masters have decided to come back into the world as soon as possible. And Maitreya said there was three things that humanity needed to do upon themselves. They didn't have to be done perfectly. So when I tell them, you know, your listeners this, everyone's going to go, yeah, right, like we're already doing this. But there had to have been a measure of it, or Maitreya would not be able to come back. The first one, there had to have been a measure of peace in the world. The principle of sharing, which had to have started to at least govern the minds of economists and the politicians of the world. And then the third thing was the religious and political groups had to start cleaning house and kind of putting their houses in order. And he said once a measure of these three things started to take place, he would come back, as he predicted in the Bible, like a thief in the night. And according to Mr. Krem, in 1975, five masters entered the five major spiritual centers on the planet. They don't really sound that spiritual, but from the master's point of view, they're spiritual centers of energy. The first one went into New York, then the second one went into London, the third one into Geneva, the fourth one into Darjeeling, and the fifth one went into Tokyo. And they were kind of the vanguard of the masters coming back into the world. And then in 1977, Maitreya entered London. And then since then, two more masters entered the world, one in Moscow and one in Rome. And then now there's actually 14 masters living incognito, as Mr. Krem himself puts, you know, kind of hidden away, but still in the world, but not recognized by the world.
Right. They're not out there turning wine into water into wine and things of that nature, but they are radiating a presence that absolutely will affect you because it affects the whole is always affected by the sum of its parts. That's the nature of that we're created as one. It's almost like it's like our immune system got a boost to help us wake up.
One of the masters actually said, joy and fear are equally infectious. So that kind of goes with what you're saying. You know, I mean, they're both infectious, you know, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And then according to Mr. Krem, and I'm just kind of reciting, since then, Maitreya has been waiting for an invitation to come out into the world and start his open mission. And in January of this year, Mr. Krem made the announcement that Maitreya had given his first interview on TV, which we talked about on the last interview, but not recognized as Maitreya. He's not going around saying, I am Maitreya, I am, you know, who Mr. Krem was talking about, the return of Christ, the return of Krishna. You know, he's not saying those kind of things.
He's not saying I'm the world teacher. He's just expressing the world teacher's views.
Exactly right. And so at last count, it was like over 15, like 19.
Now, have you seen anything that you think might have, you know, I've checked YouTube a few times.
I have not seen anything.
It's funny, most of the spiritual people don't even watch TV anymore, at least not, you know, the type where there's an interview. You know what I mean? We might watch DVDs or something.
Well,
the people I know don't even watch.
I have a stepdaughter now, so unless he shows up on Nickelodeon or something, like iCarly, I probably would be one of the last ones to see him on TV. No, I'm kidding, but...
That's wonderful. Okay.
You know,
well, it just makes me laugh because it's talking to a community that, well, I guess it would kind of be like preaching to the preachers because there is clearly already, and I know this from Facebook, a community that's already living clearly these principles. I mean, and I'm not just, they're not just pontificating, they are living these principles. And
well, that's great.
I personally find a lot of comfort in that. Yeah.
So I kind of stumbled, like I said, I'm kind of going back here and there. I'm so sorry. It's not really that organized in my head.
Don't worry about it. Welcome to my world.
Fine. Okay. Well, I had read Alice Bailey stuff, and then I stumbled across this book. I didn't like it. Then I started reading it. Anyway, I started reading in Maitreya's Mission Volume 2, where he was talking about people who have had so-called Maitreya experiences. They might have met a homeless person, or they might have had some kind of experience here or there that's out of the ordinary that changed their life. And so I didn't think much of it. At the time, I didn't really remember anything of that had happened. And then something triggered my memory, and it was funny because I can't remember when it was exactly, but about almost a year before I read Mr. Krem's first, the first book I read of Mr. Krem, Maitreya's Mission Volume 2, So I was not looking for any kind of spiritual confirmation. That's very important for me to, I can't stress that enough. I mean, I was totally not in this space. I was in Japan playing music, and I think I might have told you this story before, but I was touring with a band out of Philadelphia. They actually had a number one hit here in the United States back in the 70s, of all things, and they're still pretty popular overseas. And I was,
hey, you be nice to the 70s. I'm a big fan of the 70s.
Oh, I love the 70s, but anyway, no, they're just not a mainstream, you know
right.
I hear them on Muzak from time to time.
It's alternative,
anyway.
Right. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So there were a band called the Three Degrees. There were three ladies, that three singers and stuff. Anyway, so I was playing background music with them, and toward the end of the tour, people started, I was kind of hanging around on the side of the stage, and then people were asking them for their autograph, and then somebody started asking me for my autograph, and I was like, ooh, this is great. I can't believe somebody's asking for my autograph. I'm like, getting famous here, I look back at it now, the older I get, and it kind of makes me chuckle, my thoughts on it, because I realize now it was just the politeness of the Japanese people. They didn't want to make me feel uncomfortable by just asking for the star, who they came to see them. They were like, well,
okay.
I have no idea who you are, so but at the time it kind of boosted my ego a little bit, I won't lie to you, but anyway, so I started writing a peace sign, a heart, and a happy face. Nothing really that out of the ordinary, but I couldn't speak Japanese, I couldn't write Japanese, and contrary to most what I had thought to be the case, most people don't speak English over there. So I was trying to communicate with them, and I wanted to relay a positive message, so I thought a peace, heart, and happy face. I can't remember where I first saw those symbols put together like that, but it's probably from childhood that I saw that. Well, anyway, when I got back to Atlanta, I'm from Atlanta, and I was pretty new at the time of living in Atlanta. I had only lived here for a little bit over a year. And I didn't tell anybody that I signed my name like that when I was over there. And I was supposed to meet a friend of mine, and I got totally lost. And I could not find where he was. He ended up, now where I know where I am, it was probably about 10 miles away. That's how far away I was from where he was. So it wasn't like my friend jumped in there and did this, So I pull into this gas station to make a call, to call him, to let him know that A, I'm late, and B, how do I get to where he is, And written on the phone was all this graffiti, but there was one graffiti that really stood out, and it was written in black magic marker, as real as the graffiti on the phone. It wasn't a vision, it wasn't standing out, or there wasn't, anything like that. It was just written on the phone, very simple, like any other graffiti on there, but it said, to Gary, there was a heart, a peace sign, and a happy face. It's still alive and well, and there was a cross, and it was signed like a signature of the Christ. So after I had read this book, and this is one of the reasons why I like to tell people about these stories, because a lot of us have probably had Maitreya experiences and don't know that we've even had them. And people might have actually seen him on TV that are listening to your show and don't know who he is. They just thought he was just they thought he was a pretty cool guy or whatever like that, or, maybe they didn't like what he said. I don't know. But they don't recognize him because they just don't know that they don't know. At the time, I had no idea
You know what, though, Gare? I'm going to beg to differ on that one. And the only reason why I'm going to beg to differ is that the Maitreya experience is the Christed energy within us, kind of like, it's funny, there's the show, I'm a nanny. So there's this show, and I'm just getting off subject because, gosh knows, Goldie's got to talk too. But there's the show called Dragon Tales. And, to make a long story short, whenever one of the little dragons does a virtuous deed, virtuous, in other words, it's something good that, because it's of the goodness of good that you're doing it, this little pendant glows. And they'll get all excited. Oh, my pendant's glowing. My pendant's glowing. When you're in the presence of Maitreya, now I don't know if I have or I haven't been, but I know a Christed experience. I've had those. To say that you don't know that that's happening, that's just everybody knows when they're having a Christed experience, because the glow from within is so enormously everything. It just becomes the experience itself. It takes you outside of all realms of limitations, of worry, of separate, you know. It really brings you into the space of who we are when we're not in this illusion of third dimension. So I believe everybody who's ever had a Christfit experience, which is the Maitreya experience, absolutely knows it. Just, didn't you know it?
Not at the time.
You didn't know when you start? It didn't affect you that
I
even you didn't know Maitreya's name? I mean, you knew it was something, right?
Well, he didn't sign his name Maitreya. He just signed it the Christ. Actually, it was funny because my thought was, who's Gary? He signs his name like I used to sign my name in Japan. And I just totally dismissed
Gary, you're
it. No, I mean, I can be dense. I can be very dense sometimes. Don't even just ask anybody in my life. They're like, yeah, I can be pretty obtuse and thick sometimes. But, and then, you know, like I said, when I read this book, it jogged, you know, my memory on that. And I was like, oh, wow, I wonder if that was something, you know. And I asked Mr. Krem, and he said, oh, yeah, that was something, you know. And then I remember
okay,
something.
Okay, then I stand corrected. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, you know, and that could very well be for you. You might have recognized every one of them. You know, I
well, I'm looking for them, to be quite honest. You know what I'm saying? I am looking for that connection to all that is, because
I will say this, the times that I recognized him in his presence, it's very similar to the way you described it with that glowing orb or whatever it was, where you just it's like everything kind of melts away from you, all your troubles and everything. I definitely get what you're saying, but you know, sometimes he's very subtle, and those masters, you know, you have to really look, and I'm sure. Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
I'm sure it's a personal thing, right? Let's just speak from our own perspectives, because that's probably best for both of us.
I love you, Gary.
I don't want you to think I'm fighting you, because I'm not.
I don't think that at all.
Excellent.
But,
okay, good.
But, you know, the other thing, too, is that this happened. This was another Maitreya experience that I had where, and I'm not really trying to say these stories, you know, to kind of promote me. It's really to try to help. I mean, most people that have listened to your show heard Mr. Krem's view, and he explained this whole story a lot better than I could ever explain it. But I also want to share with people that it has impacted my life in a different way with these experiences, and maybe it can bring more validity to it. Maybe people might listen to him differently then, and it's not just Mr. Krem, this, you know, crazy old hoot talking about this thing for years and years and years. There are actually people who have had experiences, and like myself at the time, I had no idea who Mr. Krem was. So it wasn't like this all happened once, you know. I've had Maitreya experiences since I've known who Maitreya was, but the, you know, even before.
Well, can I interrupt you for one second?
Yeah,
and I do want to hear the rest, but why call it a Maitreya experience? Why not call it a Christed experience? Or, you know what I'm saying? Meaning, because do you believe it? You have this essence within you?
Absolutely. That's absolutely 100%. Yeah, sure.
Maitreya has to be there, because, I mean, I have had Christed experiences in the woods, and that's not to say that Maitreya does. He has access to the whole planet, so he could easily drop down into the little patch of woods that I'm hanging out in. But I think we don't want to put it on to the master as much as we want to say that he has mastered the Christed experience, but I too can master the Christed experience. And I do, as a fleeting moment, which I have no control over, but it's not him, or, you know, because I don't even think they're gendered, to be quite honest. I think at that point, you know, like he chose the body he's in. You know, it's a choice. So I'm just trying to make it from the verbiage be more about it's really generated from within. In his presence, he can definitely go zhoo, zhoo, zhoo. He can rev up our frequencies. I call him a he because at this point he is manifested in a physically male body, but it is self experienced. That's the only point I want to so people, because I don't want, you know, the books, when I read them, I could see how people could easily go, I don't really have to do anything. The masters will come save me. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Not easily. So I'm not saying Benjamin wrote it with that slant, and I didn't take it that way, but I can see people reading that, his books, you know, kind of all of a sudden saying, we're just waiting for the Christed one to come because he's going to save us. And it's like, no, nobody's going to save you. There are no saviors here. You had a Maitreya experience because your frequency, by your choice, went expanded. You know, that was your doing, not his.
Oh, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more with you, Goldie. I mean, it really is about us saving ourselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, each one has to individually save ourselves, and as a planet, humanity has to save itself. You know, I was just reading the other day in Maitreya's Mission Volume 2, the book I couldn't stand when I first read it. Now I read it almost every day. But Maitreya says, don't worry about people not accepting me. He goes, my plans are safe within you. My plans are safe in your hands, or something to that effect. And it really struck me. It was like, he says over and over again, and a lot of people do have that illusion of when Maitreya comes out, he's going to make everything right. I'm not going to say he's not going to. I think it will be easier for people to follow those changes when they see Maitreya and they see a master in their presence that lives harmlessly, that has this humility, that doesn't have all the hidden agenda that we're used to with political figures and other things. You're talking with somebody that, like Maitreya says, you know, the easiest way to evolve is not his way, but the way that he suggests. And it involves three very simple things, but they're very difficult to master, obviously, because we're not masters. The masters all do this naturally, like we would breathe, they do this. But the first is to have honesty of mind. Everyone thinks one thing, we've all do this, say something else and do something entirely different. We need to have that, what we think and what we say and what we do, all be in line with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then this brings up, the second point brings up why I brought this up. He said, he calls it sincerity of spirit. He says, imagine when you talk to an old friend or a confidant or whoever, a parent, somebody that you have absolute trust in and they have absolute trust in you. And when you talk with them, you're really talking without any kind of pretense. You're not trying to build yourself up. They're not trying to break you down. You're just talking, you know, whatever it is, whether it's about
sharing,
or you're very high. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure when you talk about spirituality with people, you and I are both so, you know, passionate about that existence in our lives, that when we talk to somebody else who has those same experiences or whatever, you know, the time just melts away and you might talk for 3 hours and, oh my God, I gotta go, you know, it's like 12 o'clock.
Yeah, it becomes timeless. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly the sense that these masters have. And now when Maitreya speaks, he speaks from the heart all the time. I mean, there's never any pretense. And I've experienced that type of, it's like he's there for you. He's not there to put anything over on you. It's just he's kind of there. So, and then the third thing, which is probably ties them all in together, is detachment, you know, and not recognizing. We all, for instance, a good example is we all think that every emotion that we have has this great importance. Well, not every thought and every emotion. Some of them do. I'm not saying that they don't, but, you know, the little thoughts that we have may or may not really be that important. So we have to, and we shouldn't really identify with it as being us. They're just thoughts. They're just emotions. And some are good for us, some maybe not so good, but they're just thoughts. You know, they're not really who we are. You know, it's the same thing as saying, well, I'm a communist. Well, somebody could be a communist from 1935 to 1989, and then, well, the Berlin Wall comes down, and then now they're a capitalist.
Right.
You know, and so it's just a belief. You know,
it's acknowledging that as we evolve, our belief systems will also evolve. Because if you feel separate, then you'll exude separative beliefs. As you experience a unified experience, your beliefs have to become unified. Because as soon as you're conscious, the left hand is not going to take a hammer to the right hand when it starts realizing it's the same body. It just, everything that we do stems from an unconsciousness, because hurting another human being is exactly like the left hand taking the hammer to the right hand. That is what's happening. Whether we're conscious of it, you know, I can't say or not, the thing is, once we become conscious of it, which is exactly what is happening now, our belief systems are going to change, and I think you know, from my perspective, what Maitreya is saying is, so let's kind of be gentle with ourselves and others that, you know, we might have been screaming at the top of our lungs, you know, you dirty, rotten bastard, you know, from another religion or another country. We're now, as we're becoming unified, we can embrace that being as literally sisters and brothers, and then inevitably as self, because that is the truth of who we are, all one being having a human experience. You know, there's 6 billion perspectives at any given time, but there's only one being here experiencing it. I'm a little passionate about this.
No, I love that analogy of the hammer in the hand. I might have to steal that one from you. I'm sorry.
No, don't even steal. Here, where do I sign? It's yours.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Very good point. Yeah. So, you know, and you talked about the Christ within all of us, you know, and when Maitreya speaks heart to heart on TV and, you know, in public and all those kind of things, he'll be speaking to the Christ principle within all of us. And that Christ principle, like you're saying, I mean, the Buddha predicted 2,500 years ago that around this time would come another Buddha by name Maitreya Buddha that would inspire and galvanize humanity to build a brilliant golden civilization based on righteousness and truth. And as you're saying, I mean, it's just for me to add to what you're saying, that righteousness and truth is the Christ principle within all of us, without exception.
Exactly.
Now, when we all think that we're separate, we don't think, you know, we think that guy that cut us off on the street or that person that made us mad at work or, you know, in our family or whatever, our friends or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
Well, they're not divine. But Maitreya says everyone's divine. That is a revelation in and of itself. That's going to be a revelation to a lot of people. You know, just thinking, wow, I'm divine too? Really?
Yeah,
that person that I just cussed out at the coffee shop's divine? Oh, you know, but when he says it, I mean, I can say it and people are like, yeah, that makes sense or that's an idea or I don't really agree with that or whatever. But when they hear Maitreya say it, it adds a whole, it's just like listening to Mr. Krem talk. You know, everyone just loves to listen to Mr. Krem talk because, not everybody, but I know I do, because the energy behind his words is so potent. You know, and then when you listen to Maitreya talk, it's even more potent than that. It's like, wow. You know, I really do think when Maitreya speaks to the world, it's going to be a lot like listening to Mozart. You don't want to add a G to one of Mozart's pieces and go, wow, that makes it better. Nobody's ever said that about Mozart. You know, like, hey, let me add this, and then I think this will actually did. You know, let's go ahead and change that, or let's put a mustache on the Mona Lisa. I think that would make a much better painting than it is now. You know, and so it really is, but it really is something I think when he speaks heart to heart, it's very simple, it's very to the point, you know, easy for people to understand, and I do think that that's the reason why people aren't picking up on. You know, people who are looking for him, looking on TV and on YouTube and all that kind of stuff, because he's speaking so simply that it must be the reason why people are just missing it, blown right past him right at the moment. But
I don't think that's not his target audience, you know, so to speak. His target audience is feel him, feel the presence of the Christ consciousness. And again, like I said, you don't even have to be in front of a TV. You can be in the woods. Because one of the things I'm learning, which is really interesting, a teacher that I'm resonating with deeply right now is, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, a gentleman named Daryl Anka who channels Bashar. It doesn't matter. Anyways, and by the way, Bashar, I heard in one of the Q&As, somebody asked him about the oldest living being on Earth, and he did say there was one person on the planet older than 1,000 years old. And I swear, I went, ding, 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 Maitreya, we have a winner. Because I'm always personally looking for information to cross-reference in the teachers that I work with. It doesn't have to be, quote-unquote, exact quotes. I get essences and how words can shift and change things a little bit, but the essence will be there. Bashar is essentially a group of beings from another dimension helping us become more of ourselves, which is exactly the mission of Maitreya. This is all about us becoming more of ourselves. But what's very interesting that I'm learning is if there is a frequency that is so intensely intense, our filters, which are our belief systems, if we have not opened up enough of our belief systems and let go of the material aspect of who we are, if Maitreya was to come on full head on, it would blow a circuit. You know, it's literally our job is to make our physical vehicles prepared to handle a higher frequency. And it's very similar to, like, you know, the currents, you know, like, you need certain adapters if you go from 110 to 200, you know, the thing when you do the washing machine. If you're going to put in more power, there's, like, these filter things so you don't blow circuits in your house. My understanding is very much that, it's like if we – the preparation for our physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional beings handling this type of frequency is the laws of compassion, of justice, of sharing. It's everything Mr. Krem talks about, as well as many other teachers. In other words, it's such a universal principle. And I believe right now what you're seeing on the planet, what I'm seeing on the planet, is our dark stuff, which, by the way, I personally believe that these lords of darkness, when the time is right, see, somebody had to play a bad guy in a world of duality, because you would not know light in a world of duality without someone playing the dark character. I personally take responsibility for any darkness that I have created, whether in this incarnation or any other incarnation. But I've also recognized that, okay, we're coming out of separation into unified, and through compassion to myself, and becoming the light that I have always been. But I said, when everybody, you know, when they were making, you know, categories, they were like, okay, who's going to play a dark one? And I raised my hand and went, oh, I'll play the dark one. So these lords of darkness at some point are just going to be as unified, I believe, as I am, because that's part of the whole. The part of the whole is that nothing in the universe is ever excluded. It must be inclusive in order to be whole. That is
exactly,
you know, so we're coming together now in that, of course, all of us played a role in darkness, in that we came to a planet to forget we were God, you know, to forget that, but not for no purpose, not for prison sentence or because we got booted out of heaven, because we can learn so much by knowing that which we are not, to then when we unify, we're not just coming back together. We're very different than when we first separated, you know, according to many, you know, 26,000 years ago, 3 million years ago. Pick a cycle. It doesn't really matter. The bottom line is the cycle is now coming to a close. Unification is part of a natural experience. We are not just us, the animals, the plants, the rocks, the molecules. Everything is becoming unified. And the gifts that we can give ourselves right now is the gift of compassion, and not just to self. You give it to another, too, because everybody's going through this really, like, the oil spill. The oil spill to me was about bringing attention to something dark that wants to be loved. You know, it's, we need to have compassion. Doesn't condone a bad behavior, but compassion says, I understand that anger comes from fear. So why don't I try and do everything I can to comfort you instead of, you know, whacking you around because, you know, in anger, you did something aggressive. Let's deal with it. In other words, fire can't put out fire. Anger can't end war. Peace is what we must become. And it's not that we must become it because there's something saying, you know, you have to become it, because that's who we are. The illusion is that we came into separation, and now the truth of who we've always been is that we're unified, glorious, lightful, amazingly, unconditionally loving beings. And the key word here, unconditionally loving. Most people are like, I love you unconditionally. Now stop doing that. It's like, wait a minute. Unconditional means no conditions. And we as a culture, even as light workers, people, I see it all the time with the finger waving, you know, look at all the bad people on the planet. And it's like, listen, there's an, we are unconditionally loving beings. And as soon as we accept everything on the planet as a part of the journey we all chose consciously to take, we will become Christed. And, you know, it's almost like, it's almost happening with or without our consent. We can go kicking and screaming into this unconditional love. or we can sit back, breathe, know that life is just beyond exquisite and beautiful, and dance with the most extraordinary experience where a planet is unifying. I mean, it's extraordinary when you look at it from, quote unquote, the master's point of view, which is, I accept all of this because it's all imperfection. This is what is supposed to be happening. We're not off schedule. And I know that, you know, people starving. God bless Benjamin Krem and his messages. I laugh all the time because as children, as a caretaker of children, we're always talking about share, right? You know, we tell our kids all the time, share. And I'm sure you're telling your stepkids, you know, make sure you share. And I saw this children's show called Olivia where it's kind of interesting. Pigs walk on two legs, and it's a family of pigs, and they're the characters. And Olivia says to her mother, she goes, you know, why don't you share your car with the neighbor? And why don't you share the house with, you know, the people down the road? You know, the homeless people down the road. It was like one of the most exquisite episodes of a children's show I ever saw, because it really clearly showed that we speak what you were saying earlier. We speak one thing, think another, and then do another. Because we're always saying for the kids to be very Christed, and as adults we're not following it. And it was like, you know, and the reason why I brought up the pig standing on two legs, remember 1984, George Orwell?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever read that book.
Yeah, I had to read that book at school.
Yeah, we all kind of had to. Well, it was just very poignant that, you know, Olivia was where I saw this, like, profound message of, oh, she so nailed it. You know, like, we say share all the time, but often as adults, we don't practice what we tell our children to practice.
Yeah, and our leaders talk about peace while they're creating war all the time. You know, it's just, it's
exactly
crazy. Or our so-called leaders, you know, yeah, so, yeah, that's...
Well, let me ask you a question. What do you think about the statement that we are our government?
I think we are our government.
I agree.
But and the government obviously comes from the people, and it doesn't matter what nation it is. I mean, they're just people in the government. You know, I mean, the government, I do think...
is elected. I mean, who's electing them?
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, if it's another type of government where there's no democracy or something. I mean, there's just people, you know. But I also think there is a... there's kind of a... and I could be wrong on this, but, you know, there is a type of thinking that occurs around groups of people. I mean, you see it with gangs, for instance, you know, where, you know, you have, if you were to separate, let's say, a gang in a slum or something, right, they might not be as violent or as, they kind of feed off one another. You understand what I'm saying? So I think that governments maybe do that to a point where if you took, let's say, a person out of that group, whatever it is, whether it's the CIA or, I mean, I'm kind of going off.
Right. Okay. No, that's okay.
I agree with that statement that governments are a people. I also think, I guess maybe to simplify it rather than going off on that tangent, is the government is the people. Is that what you said? What was the term again you used?
But the people are the government.
The people are the government. If in this, in our situation, in this country, I think we are the government if people participate in democracy and vote and speak their mind and, you know, and those kind of things. You know,
take it from a conscious point of view, because here I'm going to throw a scenario at you. You know, one of the biggest things that I see in our culture right now is this battle of, are ETs real or not? And of course, you know, people are having sightings and experiences, personal experiences, whether it be abductions or otherwise. It's on videotapes. You know, we've got the Phoenix Lights where 10,000 people saw the thing. I've got a good friend of mine up in upstate New York. The big thing happened. And the government is still clearly denying it. Now, what's interesting is if we are the government, I think that there's a part, for me, I can see this clearly. There's a part of people that said, the government is going to protect me from that which I fear. Like, that was a job from a conscious level, not necessarily, it will manifest as the physical reflection of what the government is right now. But that consciousness is, I'm afraid of the ETs, I'm afraid of beings being out there because, you know, it could harm me, I could be an ant farm, I could be served as a dish, as the Twilight Zone put it. And I think part of the awakening into the Christed being is to understand that, you know, A, there's clearly life teeming throughout the entire cosmos, let alone just our little planet, and that we are indeed ready to say, listen, I'm not afraid of this anymore. And so you no longer have to protect me from that which I fear, because I'm willing to take responsibility that not only am I not afraid of the galactic aspect of self, I am the galactic aspect of self. Because people are having experiences, you know, part of the Christed being experience is not just the things that they're feeling inside. Benjamin Cram, look to the stars. Look at them. It's like our home is not just on the ground anymore. Our home is within the darkness, within the velvety, beautiful aspect of space. That is who we are. And as we awaken to who we are, the governments will relax on, quote-unquote, protecting us because we'll show them through our consciousness we're not frightened by this. We're welcoming it. Bring it on. Come on down. Let's have a galactic party. And better yet, don't come on down. Bring me up. Bring me up. Let's go play.
Well, you know,
but doesn't that feel right to you?
Well, I think, you know, I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're kind of saying what Mr. Krem says all the time, is that the people are ahead of the governments in a lot of ways. And you know, the people, you know, I know I'm not scared of UFOs or, you know, flying saucers or whatever. I also wonder sometimes if the powers that be are not scared about losing their power, you know, and so, you know, Mr. Krem talks all
the time. I agree with that. I agree with that. But consciousness has much more power than their fear of losing it. Consciousness
Truth. Yeah. I think the people will eventually, you know, it's just like anything else. You know, you have the resistance forces or the forces of inertia in any government, no matter what it is, and time and time again, when enough people stand up to it, they can't resist it. They only it's almost kind of like, you know, I always kind of look at it as almost like the Wizard of Oz. You know, it's like, don't mind that little man behind
the
And so it very very much is like that. You know, they try to put themselves up as being big, but yet they're really not bigger than the people. And so
exactly, in fact, they are the people's choice. They are the, see, I think it's so funny how in separation, I'm afraid of ETs, but I'm going to blame the government for not saying they're out there. But the truth is, because I've had an experience, I have been on a craft, and I can tell you, when I first saw them, you know, I jumped up and down, so to speak, you know, metaphorically, in my being, in other words, I was like, yeah, oh my God, rock and roll. And then it got over the house, and I went, holy shit, I'm quite frightened about this. And I literally, in a split second, said, choose, Goldie. Choose, because if you're afraid, you're not going. So choose that you're going to go or be afraid and not. And I went, sometimes you got to say what the, and I went, take me, let's do this. And I went. Where I can, but I clearly got like, oh my, this is, you know, I've been on some trips before in my life. That was wild. And it is scary because the programming and everything around it doesn't prepare us for this. But life and nature do. I see on YouTube all the time dolphins swimming with dogs, deers playing with cats, monkeys and kittens and gorillas and pigs or tigers weaning. Interspecies relationship from a harmonious point of view in nature, in other words, triggered by the animal itself, is everywhere. Why would we be any different as humans? We're part of nature. It's reflecting it to us all the time.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
yeah. I mean, there's even a video of a dog saving another dog off the interstate that somebody,
Did you see that? Extraordinary. Extraordinary behavior.
In a lot of ways, I think they're more human than animals sometimes exhibit more of the good in humanity than we sometimes do. Not all of us.
Well,
but,
that's
you know,
their
general,
job.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. Yes.
You know, unfortunately, you know, the power, the faculties of the mind, like you were talking about being separate and the feeling of separateness, you know, it's going back to the hunger in the world, you know, it's the same thing over and over again, you know. When I found this to be my experience a lot of times talking to people about the need to share and all that kind of stuff, and I do share whenever I can, okay. The opportunities that come up and all that kind of stuff with UNICEF and everything or on the street or whatever it is. So I could do more. I mean, we all could do more, right? But it is what it is. But the thing of it is when you talk about it, people say, oh, you know, I mean, that's bad. You know, or, oh, that's awful, and that's it. You know, and I think a lot of times people think that maybe it's too much for them to handle. I think another thing is it's just there's this sense of, I'm not saying, you know, people who are starting to become more conscious or aware, or as you put it, what Christ did, is that the word?
Well,
you know,
that's,
or the Christ, aware of the Christ within themselves, you know, where, but let's just say the average, you know, Joe the plumber, not Joe the plumber himself, but just Joe as, you know, if it's not happening on their doorstep, it's either not real, or I think most Americans, if they saw somebody literally starving to death on their street, they would give them food. But because it happens on the other side of a planet, they're like, you know, oh, well, you know, or, you know, some people might even take it a step further and go, well, because they're not American, I wouldn't do that. But those I think are actually in the minority. But I think most people, if they truly saw somebody hungry, would, you know, like literally starving to death.
Well, look at 9/11. Look at 9/11. Because I'm not saying that the people in these third world countries, Africa, Nigeria, even India, God bless, don't have extremely hard and challenging times. I mean, Slumdog Millionaire was such an amazing movie and how it pulled on my heart. But one of the things I'm starting to understand, that, which helped me understand, was part of it was this oil spill. And that is that every person's journey is, you cannot know another's journey unless you've walked their entire soul incarnation. Now, I am not saying that people, you know, deserve, you know, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, yes, they, you know, if they could help themselves, you know, they wouldn't be going, you know, into these starving cultures or countries. But the truth is, I can't make an assessment for someone else's journey. I can clearly help that which is in my local universe, exactly like you said. I can help those around me. And if it's my calling to go to Africa and dig wells, and I think that's fantastic. But I think we tend to put very Western culture ideas on their experience when I don't think, my heart tells me there's a bigger God experience happening here. I don't know how or when, if it ever becomes clear to me what that journey was. But for me, in my journey to becoming a Christed being, I just keep getting, just take care of yourself, Goldie, in the sense of help yourself, help others. Do everything you can within your ability to do it, and that is the Christed journey. As opposed to, and I would never tell anybody, oh, you're wasting your time going to Africa. Never, never, never. I would never say that to anybody about anybody's journey. I just recognize that I can't make an assessment about another. I can't even make an assessment about my next-door neighbor because I don't know that journey or the reasons they do it or what comes of it, because that's just too vast of information for anybody to even think they can acknowledge about another human being. Or, and it, you know, when everybody was saying the animals in the ocean, you know, pray for the animals, pray for the animals, I got from Bashar going, the animals, don't put human experiences on the animals. They're choosing to leave. And the first thing that came to me was when the tsunami hit, not Bangladesh, the tsunami in like 2004, whatever, 2006, all the animals ran to the hills, and it was like almost no animals got hurt in the tsunami. So they have an instinct about these things. And in fact, as you said, they have much clearer instincts than often we do. So if they're involved in it, I do believe that they do it to help us evolve, but I don't think they experience death or anything like that the way we experience death. I don't think there's fear involved because they don't have the ego aspect, and the fear is the illusion in the ego. Fear is not, if you knew you were an eternal being, which you are, but if you knew it, death would be like, you know, okay, I died today, I'll get born tomorrow. It would lose its oomph. Right?
Sure, absolutely.
Or no?
No, I agree.
So, I, and again, like I said, I'm not saying, because I know Benjamin Krem talks very much about the starving kids, and I'm not saying that they're not, and we don't need to share. Please don't misinterpret it as that. But from a particular individual standpoint, people choose what they choose because in their soul and in their heart, it feels, you know, I think that they're still getting soul lessons and life experiences, even if they're only living short lives. I don't, you know what I'm saying? They're no less quality in their experience than, you know, someone who might be living in America, you know, not having that experience. That, these are really hard concepts to share because you don't want to come off sounding crude or uncaring or cold. Yet my personal experiences are telling me you can't understand, so don't try, Goldie. Don't try to understand that which is God's space. I'm not in God awareness, so I can't place belief systems or identities because that is part of limitation. I can only trust that everything is perfect. That's what works for me anyways, in timing and everything like that, so. Gary, am I shutting you down? I don't want to shut you down.
No, not at all. I'm just listening to you. I was thinking about a time when I was in when I was about 15, and my dad was working in El Paso, Texas. He lives in St. Louis, so we drove from St. Louis to El Paso, and I can't remember where my father was at this point, but he was around somewhere, but not in my space, so I was able to kind of have this experience, and it changed my life, Goldie. It really did. But
please share. That would be awesome.
We're walking down by the Rio Grande River, and at this point, the Rio Grande River is no farther than 30 feet length, you know, in diameter, and you know, it just looked like it was a few feet deep. It didn't look very deep at all. It was very shallow at this point.
Okay.
And I see this shanty town, and it was literally a shanty town. There was just lean-tos and nothing else. There was no houses, there was no lights, no cars, nothing. It was just...
Where is the Rio Grande River? I'm sorry, geography is just my core.
It separates Texas from Mexico, excuse me.
Okay.
And so I walk over to the edge of the river, the bank of the river, and I see the river. I mean, it's just right there, and then this little boy, half-naked boy, comes out of this lean-to, and I was actually able to drive, so I was 16 at that time, and he looked like he was maybe around 8 or 9, and he comes to the edge of the river, and we just look at each other. I don't wave at him. He doesn't wave at me. I don't smile at him, but we made eye contact, and I just stared at him, and he just stared at me. And then I turned around, and I see these lights behind me of El Paso, which was a fairly big city, a few hundred thousand people maybe.
Okay.
And then I look in his direction, and it was around 7 o'clock-ish at night in the summertime, so it was still kind of light, but the sun was going down a little bit. But there was no electricity on his side. There was no street lights. There was no lights
right.
in any houses or anything.
Right.
And I realized at that point, the only thing that separates my life from his is this river. And my trainer says, actually, the self can be realized whether you're rich or you're poor, but it can't be realized when you're starving to death. And it's also about the individual, but it's also about our planet, I think, more so than it's about as much about the individual as the planet. Let me just take it off that. But
okay.
You know, he is a man of, Maitreya longs for peace and the happiness of humanity. And you can't have peace and true happiness when literally half the world is starving to death for no reason. There's not like we have to have this happen. There's a shortage of food or there's some catastrophe or something like that. We actually are living in a world of a 5 or 6% surplus in food.
Absolutely.
It's just not being distributed properly. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I see where you're coming from with, you know, the whole reincarnation thing and all that kind of stuff, but...
Well, and not just that. Go ahead, please.
No.
I had my time. You go.
No. It's not your time or my time. It's just, you know, it's your show anyway. But, you know, but...
No, but I honor what you're saying. Please.
Oh, okay. No, it's just... If you're not around it and don't see it, it's very hard to describe the experience when you truly see somebody who is starving. And when I was in Manila and in the inner cities of Manila and stuff, and you see families with nothing, and they might be very happy. I mean, I doubt it. You know, I mean, they were working very hard for the basic necessities of life. It's not, Maitreya is not saying that everybody should have a car and a house and this, that, and the other. It's food, clothing, shelter, health care, and education. The basic
right.
necessities. And by doing that, it could create justice in the world where that will be fair. You know, there will be some richer people and some poorer people, but there won't be this extreme rich and extreme poverty. And
right.
it's the injustice in the system. The system was built on the energies from Pisces. You put in your trailer on your website, you know, talking about, you know, we'll talk about the economic crash.
Right.
And stuff.
Right.
And why this is happening, and the structures, the political structures that you talked about, the economic structures, the social structures, the educational, the religious, all these things are built on the ways of the past. They utilize the energies of Pisces, which the energies of Pisces are just as divine as the energies of Aquarius, but how humanity is used them is the, you know, the lower aspect of that energy. And so rather than the divine energies of Pisces, like self-sacrifice, individualism, all those kind of things, idealism, it's created, you know, competition, greed, individualism
right.
at the cost of somebody else's individualism. And to the point where we could destroy ourselves, which is why Maitreya has to come back now versus 1,200 years from now, because we probably would destroy ourselves if we keep going at this pace. He actually says, if we keep going down this path, we're going to go right off a cliff. And that's the choice that humanity has. And one of the things that one of Maitreya's jobs, people always ask me all the time, and they ask Mr. Krem all the time, and, you know, this kind of thing, why is he coming back? You know, is it just enough that enough people are experiencing the Christ principle within themselves and all that kind of stuff? And it's both. It's not either or. Maitreya couldn't just come back into the world if the Christ principle was not present in a significant percentage of the populace. He couldn't come back because nobody would listen to him, you know, but yet...
Or he couldn't come back because it is our consciousness that is almost in essence helping create his conscience. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's drawing him back in. It's drawing the masters back into the world. Exactly.
Right.
And
by reflections of who we are. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, but at the same time, these masters see this world as divided for no reason. You know, on other planets, you know, Mars being one of them. You know, Mars has always been in Greek mythology was the god of war. Right?
Right.
But yet they don't have war on Mars. They don't fight. You know, they all learn, they live in peace. You know, it's kind of
ironic. Well, but they're not in the third dimension either.
Well, they're on the higher levels of the etheric, yeah. They're on the levels, according to esotericism, there are four levels of physicality above gas. You know, we were all taught that it's just solid physical, liquid physical, and gaseous physical, right? Well,
right.
According to esotericism, there's four levels above that, of which are called the etheric. They're just as material as what we see. So if you get on that level, it would look just as material as our level. It's just a different level of physicality. And
right.
So some people can see energy around trees. You know, I'm sure you've experienced something like that. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah. No, I can
see.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But
so,
not beings, you know, just the light. So yes.
Yeah. Just
yes.
The light. So you know, from what I understand, that is an etheric that's starting to see on a very basic level. You know, without any kind of detail or anything like that. You know,
right.
To some
right.
level of the etheric vision. So if you go to Mars, you go to Venus, you know, you would see nothing. You know, but if you could. If you had etheric vision, you would see all these people. So
right.
it's really going back to what you were talking about children. You know, it really is the potential. It's not even the potential. It's really who we are to live in peace and harmony. But yet
yeah.
we are all taught from the cradle to fight and compete and to this, that, and the other, and that's created the world that we've lived in or we're living in. So it's not working. So the governments were built on this old ways of thinking. Competition, nationalist views, you know, at the expense
borders.
Of other nations, borders, yeah. all those
yeah.
kind of things. And so
yeah.
it creates more separate, you know, separate ideals and separate ways of thinking. And, you know, the United States is the best country. No, France is the best country. No, I think it's Japan. You know. And so everyone thinks that they're the best country, that they're the greatest country in the world, when actually we're just all people. And the only thing that's separating
right.
me from that boy I saw in Mexico was this river, and it's all made up. I mean, why is that river not a part of Texas? You know, I mean, it versus being the border between Mexico and Texas. It's somebody
right.
made it up. So
somebody declared that,
Yeah, so if he had been born here in the States, chances are he wouldn't be living in a lean-to. He'd be living in a house. He might not be rich, but he would be living a lot better than he was living there, right? So
well, we have a lot of poverty in this country as well, though. I mean, we really...
Absolutely.
Have a
Absolutely.
Lot of, considering, quote unquote, we are, you know, the strong country, you know, it's like
yeah.
as a reflection, we're almost getting, that sounds a little more egotistical than actual.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, and the masters say, I mean, there's not one country in the world where everybody as a right has food, clothing, shelter, health care, and education. I mean, you see how much the government has been. You know, Congress has been going back and forth over health care. I mean, it was really just health insurance reform. It wasn't even health care reform.
Right.
And everyone's flipping out about this and flipping out about that and yada, yada, yada. But I would be willing to bet you every single person that was in Congress fighting against health insurance reform has health insurance from the government.
Exactly.
You know.
Yes, I agree.
And so, you know, I say this a lot to myself, you know, the odds of somebody coming over here and going into a store and blowing themselves up and killing me through a terrorist act are infinitesimally small, right? I mean, it's not going to happen every day. But the chances of myself or somebody that I love having an illness and not having the proper insurance to get the good coverage that they need to be cured from that illness and passing away are significant. I mean, it could
yeah.
be 1 in 10, 1 in 5, you know,
yeah.
50%, 50-50, you know. And so, I mean, I have insurance, but it's not the best insurance. It doesn't cover me if I have cancer. It doesn't cover me if I have this. But I'm working jobs, but I'm only working part-time jobs. So
right.
I can't afford the insurance, you know. So, it, you know, the argument
I'm self-employed.
That, you know,
I know. I
yeah,
get you.
Exactly.
Yes.
So,
yes.
you know, I hear in Europe, you know, where people have health insurance and you can just go in for free and get health insurance. You might have to wait a little bit, you know, but for the most part you have health care and all those kind of things. I would love for that to be like this in this country. You know, it's funny, Ben's master said, or actually Maitreya says that, socialism and capitalism are two wheels on the same cart. And when you have just capitalism, the cart won't go. If you have just socialism, the cart won't go. You need both.
Right.
So
see, that's the separatism. See, that's where
exactly.
If we look at everywhere, we see how separation is. It's not just in masculine and feminine. It's also in socialism and capitalism. You know, it's like we played separate to the hilt. And I mean, I don't know why I'm so passionate. You're bringing this passion out in me. I normally just keep my mouth shut, but it just seems that let me ask you a question. Instead of me preaching, let me get some dialogue with you. God bless you. Do you believe that everything is in divine order at all times?
Divine order means what to you? Like,
well, divine order to me Exactly, part of the whole. Everything is functioning as a whole.
I think that there are points along the path that are predestined, yes, but I think that humanity, through the course of the free will, has the right to choose, and so those points might be pushed back a little bit. It's flexible. It's not set in stone in terms of, at this time, something such will happen. And so that's just my beliefs on it. I think that it's
But I'm not talking about predetermining things. I'm saying, do you believe that that which does happen or has happened is divine, or do you believe that there are things that happen outside of divinity?
Well, I think everything in life is divine. I don't think that you can say something is divine and something isn't divine. It's all, everything is divine. But is it, like for instance, you know, let me just, I don't know if this is what, if this will answer your question or not, but according to my beliefs, there are, each planet goes through what are called 7 rounds. You know, it's kind of like an incarnational process, but it doesn't kill off the planet and starts over again. It's just, it's like a cycle. It goes up on a hill, and then you get to the top of the hill, and then you realize you got to go back down the hill and go back up to get on the other hill, which is slightly higher.
And
know?
Things and happen in cycles of 7 often, so
exactly.
That makes sense. Okay.
So these rounds take millions and millions of years to go through. Like, for instance, Venus is in the middle of its 7th round, so they're almost done. They're,
okay.
If you were to go to Venus and talk to somebody from Venus, I mean, they're gods. They're all...
Compared to us,
they're all, they would be masters, you know. And,
okay.
You know, if you go to Mars, Mars is actually technologically, and in a lot of their ways they view things, are thousands of years more advanced than us. But from a planetary standpoint, they're roughly around the same point as we are. They're in the middle of their 4th round.
Okay.
Our Earth is in the middle of the 4th round. Pluto is in the 2nd round, so Pluto's got a ways to go. You don't want to go to Pluto, from what I hear. I don't know. They might have some great beaches, but I think
it's pretty chilly out there.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
okay. And besides, we demoted poor Pluto. Poor Pluto. Sorry,
guys. Yeah. According to esotericism, the middle of the 4th round is where a planet starts to come into its own. It starts to, you know, it makes a huge step forward. It kind of, you know, it's, you know, it, that's when it starts to kind of, you know, oh. Okay, well we are, that's the reason why these space brothers are coming back in more and more frequency, to remind us that we're not alone, obviously. They're here to help. They're our brother, they're our elder brothers, all looking out for us, because the solar system really is a unit. It's a system. There's, every planet is inhabited by humanity.
An organ. You can almost look at a planet as an organ.
Yeah,
like in the body.
Yeah, precisely. Exactly right. And so when we're holding all the other planets back by us not making the mistake. So according to esotericism, Earth is where roughly where Mars is, but because we've made so many mistakes, you know, obviously we don't have the technology that they have. Obviously we don't have the belief in the cosmos and the knowledge that they have, and that's held us back. But you know,
and who is saying that this is holding us back? And because that takes us out of divinity. If we make mistakes, that's not divine. See, and this is where I have trouble.
Well, okay. Well, there's a saying in esotericism called, even an arhat can fall. And an arhat is a person who has taken 4 of the 5 initiations of becoming a master. A master would be someone who's taken 5 of the planetary initiations, at least 5.
Okay.
So a first degree initiate would be somebody like, let's say, John Lennon. You know, somebody maybe of note, you know, some of maybe they're famous, some of maybe aren't famous, it doesn't really matter, but you know, he was somewhere between 1 and 2. Malcolm X, let's see, who else? You know, Princess Diana. These are greater examples of a first degree initiate. Somebody who has a desire to serve, even. They might not be serving, but they have this desire to serve, very strong desire to serve.
Okay.
May or may not, but more than likely has taken 1 of the initiation. I can't really say that for certainty, but anyway. And then you move into somebody who's taken 2 of the 5, somebody like Martin Luther King, Einstein, Picasso, somebody, they have a lot more
impact on their environment than, let's say, a first-degree initiate would have at this point, because they're more evolved.
Okay.
It's not that they're better people, they're just, they're manifesting their divinity more. It's all a question of awareness, of your own divinity.
Yeah.
We each have that divinity inside of us, but we might not be aware of it or conscious of it or even believe that, that's the case. You know, like you're saying,
yeah.
It's belief. Well, you first you have to kind of believe it, and then you have to become aware of it, and then you have to become conscious of it and aware of it and in control of it and all that kind of stuff. So, and then if somebody who's taken 3 out of the 5 would be somebody like Mao Zedong of China or Mozart, Beethoven, Abraham Lincoln, very advanced, I mean, people who are controlling, you know, who are leaders of great nations, you know, like Abraham Lincoln, you know, at the time
right.
of crisis, he held our country together. Not everybody could do that. Yeah, I know I couldn't do that. I mean, it took a level of spirituality that I don't manifest at this moment in time. And then you have a fourth degree initiate, somebody like Jesus, not now, but Jesus when he was being overshadowed by Maitreya in Palestine was a fourth degree initiate. So even somebody on the level of Jesus, it's rare, but it does happen where they misuse their spiritual powers, and usually they totally misuse their spiritual powers, and they come tumbling back down, and they have to go back through the light again. And planets do the same thing. So, for instance, our Earth, if we do not make the changes, according to Mr. Krem, if we do not make the changes that Maitreya is advocating for the world, the consequences will be severe, and we'll destroy ourselves. We won't have a planet to incarnate on. This planet will become devoid of life for millions and millions of years. And we'll go, as a humanity, we'll go tumbling back down again to some low planet like Pluto or lower than that and have to start back over again through all the light. And he said the pain would be just tremendous, and the struggle to get back to where we are even today would take millions and millions and millions of years to do. So why would we want to do that, you know? But it can happen where we, and humanity has made mistakes. There was a time, according to the masters, when the word to steal did not exist. We were that evolved. What was the word? To steal.
Okay.
Didn't exist. People didn't steal anything because they didn't feel like they had any possessions to steal or to take from anybody else. So it was.
Well, also, if we were telepathic, you can't steal from somebody if you can read their mind. Not read their mind, but you know what
exactly.
I mean? You're in their field of being. You can't lie. You can't steal. You can't cheat because everything's kind of transparent.
We've fallen from this quite high end level of existence to where we are today, where we can, you know, very easily destroy ourselves. I mean, that's pretty bad, you know. So I know Mr. Krem talks about this a lot, about the Day of Declaration, when Maitreya speaks directly to the world and everybody above the age of 14 will hear his call to humanity inwardly in their own head. In their own language. So if you are Japanese, you'll hear it in Japanese. You know, we'll hear it in English. You know, if you're Spanish, you'll hear it in Spanish and so forth. And he doesn't really talk about what he's saying, but one thing he brings up a lot is that Maitreya will show humanity the level from which we've fallen into the depth of materialism that we are today, but also show us the vision of where we can go if we just share the resources of the world. He says, when you share, you recognize God within the other person. And you also become God-like by sharing, because God shares. God is justice. God is love. God is sharing. It's, you know, you don't have to pay the sun to shine, right? You know, I put on my Facebook page, you know, one time, my spiritual belief is, you know, I'm pretty sure God is not a capitalist, but all of us can be debated, you know, and I don't... It was funny, you know, and I had this thought, and then I watched this movie. It was called Capitalism, A Love Story by Michael Moore.
I saw it! Very good movie. Yes, I saw it.
Do you remember those clips that he had from the old 70s movie Jesus of Nazareth, where this guy comes in and he's got some illness, really bad illness, and, you know, Jesus obviously didn't say this to the guy, but he goes, he did not have health care. He does not have health insurance. Let him pay full fare, you know. You know, and then he says something about, you know, how will you bring peace on earth? And he goes, let the markets bring peace to the earth. You know, he just
right.
never said those kind of things. But, you know, God is not a, I could be willing to bet you, and we talked about Maitreya and the masters and everything. Let's just say hypothetically that I'm just talking out of my, you know what,
and they don't. No, exist. Well, I'm still pretty sure that God is not a capitalist. You know, I don't think it's going to cost us money. So, but you know, capitalism has its place, and I, you know, we talked about the whole two wheels on the cart. You know, it. My Treya says the, or actually, I'm sorry, I take that back. Mr. Krem asked his master one time, "What is the best balance between socialism and capitalism?" And he said, 70% socialism and 30% capitalism is the ideal balance.
Now, there you go.
Now,
okay.
Right now in the United States, according to Benjamin Krem's master, it's 95% capitalism and 5% socialism. And the nowhere on the planet does this balance exist, you know, whether they're too socialist and not enough capitalism or whatever. And the only countries that come close are the Scandinavian countries of Finland, Norway, and Sweden, and Denmark, not Iceland, but those three or four.
Okay.
And where they're 40% socialism and 60% capitalism. So even where if you were to go to Norway or Sweden, you can get free health care. They actually have, if you're sick, you know, and you like term, let's say you have cancer or something, you have to miss work, that they will pay what you were making so you can recover. And that's still only 40% what Maitreya is talking about. Can you imagine,
right.
You know, where, you know, if you were truly sick, you would not have to worry about, oh, my God, what's going to happen to my house? Am I going to lose my house?
Of course. And, you know, that is people's biggest fear about getting sick is bankruptcy. It's not death at first, it's bankruptcy.
I could see that.
I mean, that's what whatchamacallit's movie, the one you were just talking about. You know, right,
or,
in this
know,
country, it's all about the almighty dollar, you know.
Or, you know, or even something that you can't really control. If a family member, like a parent or something gets sick or a child gets sick, you have to leave work and you know, you might not be able to afford to do that. I mean, we're all skating,
right.
Everyone's skating on thin ice. You know,
right.
There are the elect few that have the money to be able to take years off and not have to work or paint or play music or whatever like that. They can just chill out. But most of us, you know, you can't really go a year without working, you know.
Right.
Maybe you
right.
could. I don't know. I'm speaking for myself. I know I couldn't, you know. So you're going to have to do something. So it has a level of stress. Even in the developed world, so to speak, there is an element of stress based on the system. It's creating a lot of stress within all of us. That's unjust. It's unjust. And so you have the hungry of the world, you have this, you have that, and Maitreya is coming into this divided world where people do not even realize that they're souls. They think that they're just bodies. Like the brain is the top part of who they are.
Yeah.
He's going to be speaking to them heart to heart about, no, you are actually so much more than the body. And you're the soul. Your soul is divine. It's permanent. You are just as divine as the sun, as the planets, as the stars in the sky, as even when, as great a person as master as Maitreya is. I mean, he's omniscient. He will say even that you are just as divine as he is. He's no better than you. And it always kind of cracks me up when I listen to fundamentalists talk about Maitreya. They've never heard him speak. You know, but they think he's the Antichrist. They've never experienced his love. They think he's the Antichrist, and they're totally.
I've seen that on his videos. You know, the videos that they Share International, you know, puts up, the comments on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
People like literally, you know, he's the Antichrist. Stay away from Benjamin Krem. And I never justify any of it with an answer, but I can tell you that I've personally shaken Mr. Benjamin Krem's hand as soon as he touched me. I dropped to my knees and bawled like a baby. I mean, there was an absolute electrical rush that went through my body when he shook my hand. I mean, it was I dropped to my knees the same way I dropped when Amachi hugged me, that hugging prophet.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
it was profound. It was profound. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that that there's value in all of this negativity?
I think it's unnecessary. I think that as everything in life...
That's not what I asked you. I agree that... okay, because...
Do I think there's...
You're skating.
No, well, I'm not... No, because you're you know, in this type of conversation, you know, if I was talking to somebody... you know, who was not
coming from a, you know, a quote-unquote spiritual perspective. You know, you have to kind of walk a fine line between this world and the next, you know, so to speak. I'm using my words just, you know. So, yes and no. You know, I mean.
Okay, I honor that.
You know, I think that, you know, yes, there's value in having to go through this struggle because, you know, I was reading a book by George Adamski, and he was talking with the Space Brothers from Venus and stuff like this, and they refer to our planet as the planet of universal suffering. And they also said that we're a lot like, he even used this word, like a commando school, and that the people who live on this planet, when you become liberated master, there is a quality about the masters coming from the Earth that it's almost like if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere kind of deal. You know,
exactly.
I mean,
I have read similar things. Yes. Yes.
Not quoting
them
properly.
So
I mean, you know, I guess in the long run, you know, you'll have to ask yourself that question, you know, after you're long since been a master. Like, was it really worth it? Yeah, I guess it was. You know, I don't know. I mean, who can really answer that question at this moment? I don't know.
Well, because I can tell you from my own experiences that when the embodiment of compassion as a stream of consciousness is in you, for one thing, there's no victims. I mean, I have worked on, you know, kind of digging up the belief that I myself was a victim. And as, you know, I'm the microcosm of the macrocosm. If I'm not a victim of the choices of being molested and the choices of being a drug addict and the choices of this and the choices of that and everything I've ever done in this lifetime, it's impossible for me to live in the presence that I have and look at another as a victim. This is where I get, you know, my own, I can't wrap my mind around it. And so I can, you know, share through consciousness, through love, through a radio program, through anything I'm doing, but especially as a living example that, you know, have compassion for that which is dark. Have compassion for that which, you know, in the sense of, I believe, like I said kind of earlier in the program, light wouldn't be light on this planet without the reflection of dark to see. You wouldn't know how good something was unless something standing next to it was doing something bad. Mm-hmm. And because I have walked the line of, you know, genuine separation, where the first 30 years of my life, I was afraid of everything. I mean, when I went to therapy at 30, which was actually my awakening, I didn't know it at the time, I was just like, I can't live afraid anymore. Now, I grew up in Fairfield County, basically plenty of food, plenty of shelter, plenty of thing, but fear was absolutely a daily part of my experience. I was suicidal. I never felt that I belonged here. I never felt loved. I always felt misunderstood. I believe that these are universal principles, whether you have money or not. And I absolutely understand what you're saying about if you're not fed, you can't ascend. I do know that because, boy, when I'm hungry, I am a bear and a half. I don't know how these people live on the breatharians. So I do honor that. But I also know that I had hell and prison without being, you know, Nelson Mandela. I was also in a prison for 30 years, and what has liberated me in that prison is my acceptance of my divinity. That is what has liberated me. And in the accepting of my own divinity, it's very difficult for me to look at anything else and say that's not divine. I don't know how to, I can't do it anymore. I just can't. So I have to share what I'm having as a personal experience to my audience, that the value that I got is, you know, when someone comes up to me and says that they're a drug addict, the first thing I can do is tell them, you can still be liberated. You can still have a wonderful life of love and health and relationship and joy, because I know what it's like to be, you know, a crackhead. I mean, I was smoking crack for a while. I was in a pretty bad situation. So just for me, I have to be able to give the darkness value because I've lived it. If I was still in regret, I don't believe the essence of the divine, the Christ, could not come into my physical being, because for me, the keeping of it out is the regret, is the guilt, and is the shame. Those, to me, are the true demons, you know, on this planet. And I get materialism. People that, you know, that are materialistic, in my personal opinion, are souls that, you know, like, I think we were all kind of birthed at once, but I think through free will, we can choose to learn a virtuous life, i.e. the life of the masters, at any pace we want. Like, we can keep coming back in and going through, you know, cycles of, and again, the reason why I do I don't call it reincarnation because every lifetime is absolutely complete and unique into itself, but incarnations. And I believe we come into incarnations going, you know, I didn't get it the first time, you know, or the second time or the 100th time. And, like, for me, at this point, because I've come from this dark space of drugs, alcohol, sex, and loneliness, at this point, my courage is that I want to face every demon that's in my path. I want to face jealousy, insecurity, humility, all of those things. I literally consciously walk that journey that I will have a humble, I mean, I moved out of my house after my mom died. 5 years later, I was like home or homeless. I lost all my money. I had to come home. My father was like, this is not your house anymore. You're not welcome here. And, you know, when your father says that to you after the first time you've seen him in 5 years, you know, you got to swallow the humble pie and go, okay, well, kick me out if you're going to kick me out, but I got nowhere else to go. And he made me sleep on the couch for like 30 days just because he wanted me to swallow humble pie. And I've got friends like losing houses right now and everything going, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, go home. And they're like, no, I can't go home. And it's like, why? Because humble pie is not what you choose to eat. You know, in other words, choose it. You know, you're gonna go another route where you're gonna sell whether your body or your at whatever. You know, people are just selling everything because humility in and of itself scares the living crap out of them. They can't even imagine being humble and having humility. Where for me, it has become the greatest gift my father has ever given me, other than the fact that he bore me. You know, he helped, he was a part of the boring of, you know, my childbirth. Humility is exquisite in the essence of nothing can hurt you when you're humble. It helps me, for the first time in my life, I understand how Viktor Frankl could write a logos, a new way of existence, of joy and beauty while in a concentration camp. And the key word to that was humility. And I live in Fairfield County. I mean, we are like the East Coast Beverly Hills. There is so much prejudice and materialism, you know, in the five towns surrounding me. I've always said, what am I doing here? Why was I not born in, like, Oregon or Michigan, you know, with the trees, where I would, you know, thrive as a human being. And I get that on some level, I chose this particular hell because I can do the most good if I chose to take on the demons that I've taken on, which are the demons, I believe, for everyone. These are universal demons, you know, whether it's, or at least it's universal in America, you know, because, again, I don't know that, you know, humility is something that somebody who's starving in Africa has to really worry about. I don't understand that concept, so I can't make remarks on that because I've never been. But I always send love and I always send compassion and light and awareness, like you were saying, awareness, because we give our power away. One of the things I saw clearly is I was giving my power away to every Tom, Dick, and Harry for the first 30 years of my life because I so wanted them to tell me that I was lovable and I was loving. And as I am gaining momentum in my own awakening, I am taking my power back taking my power back doesn't deny them who they are, but it acknowledges who I am. And that is a space I believe if we all came to, you wouldn't have to tell us to share. We would all be in our passion doing what we love to do. Work would be a word that was just obsolete. And the planet would function as an ecosystem in a perfection that would just blow us away. And then in that perfection, we would do, like Benjamin Krem talks about with his master, the light working where the healings are coming about, not because we're cutting things out of our body, but because we're actually healing and in a flow of energy that is divine. I mean, we are divine. So, but I believe that part of it starts in the bringing together that we have to give value to the dark. That's like one of the first steps to it, because how else can it come back into us? How else could it unite if we say, listen, you don't belong here. You can't separate anything in unification. You know, it has to have value.
Yeah, even the masters, when they refer to the forces of darkness, they also call them the lords of it's the process of evolution is where the masters are concerned with humanity. Humanity is evolving. It is not following the involutionary path. There was a time when humanity was involuting, you know, back.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, involution is coming from spirit into matter. Evolution is going from matter back into spirit. I mean, spirit is matter, and matter is spirit on some level, but, you know, looking at it from our standpoint, it really is. And so it's that yin-yang thing. So the forces of darkness do have a role to play. They actually hold the planet together physically. Now, where the problem comes into play is when they
don't let go.
Well, they start to create mischief and problems for those who are trying to evolve out of matter. And so it's kind of they talk about it a lot, you know, but the masters of darkness actually are coming from the previous solar system, when the highest form of spirituality was actually what we would consider to be evil. I have no concept of it. We could talk about it and I would be like, I don't know. You know, I'm just reading this out of a book, but you know, I guess the
Well, let me ask you a question though. Have you ever experienced yourself as being evil?
No, not in the level that they're talking about. No. I mean,
not at that level. I'm talking, did you ever pull wings off of flies or, torture a small creature of any level, whether it be an insect or a frog
Insects. But, you know, it's funny you brought that up. Actually, my dad used to call me the Mad Masher because I used to mash bugs.
Okay.
And this experience was eventually confirmed by Mr. Krem. I wasn't asking him for it. I was just telling him the story. We were talking about animals, but I was at a friend of mine's house, and there was a moth flying around, and I don't know what made me think of it, but I actually thought to the moth, I said, if you want to get out, you fly somewhere and land, and I'll pick you up, and I promise you I won't kill you, and I'll let you out. And it immediately went, loop, and landed right on my knee. And I took it out, and I let it out, and he said that the Master Jesus, actually, the Master who was Jesus, manifested that moth. You know, I've experienced, I guess, both sides of the whole insect thing. You know, I mean, if an insect's in my house, it stands very little chance of surviving, you know. But, you know,
well,
I don't go out of my way like I used to, but yeah, I mean,
as a kid, I remember having bowls of sugar, these little plastic bowls. I'd get a fly in there, I'd cover the fly, and I'd roll it down the street. I mean, literally with the feeling of, you know, I'm probably kicking this fly's ass, and I was enjoying it. I mean, this, hands down, I was enjoying it. So the whole key comes down to we just have to admit that we have this in us. Not that we want to, because, I mean, at this point, you know, I'm definitely, let's share the love. I'm in the woods all the time, and I just, you know, literally talk to the ants. I bring them crackers. Listen, I'll give you guys crackers. Please go eat the crackers. I prefer you to stay off my blanket. But if
exactly.
they do, you know, we're cohabitating here. This is not my space. I'm sharing space with you. And, again, the sharing comes up. Oh, gosh. Where does the time go, Gareth? Anyway.
Yeah, it's already gone, huh?
Yeah, I just want to say acceptance is a very key part. We've all, if not in this lifetime, I've had visions. Oh, my God. Goldie was a really bad person in, you know, a few lifetimes back, and oh, my. But I've come to accept that, and in the accepting that, just like I accepted my drug addict days of this lifetime, it has empowered me by accepting it. Because in that acceptance, I am expanded. I grow the more I take in. Never can you grow by shunning something out. You can only grow by inclusivity, including that which I didn't like about myself. But at this point, there's nothing I don't like about myself because once you accept it, it feels good. do you have any information, places you're going to be, something, anything you want to promote or?
Just keep watching the tube and, you know, when you hear somebody that is talking about sharing and, you know, my trail will start to speak louder and louder and louder, you know, and more forcefully, as his master put it, I think, about the need for sharing, the need for, you know, ending of war and those kind of things, is, you know, I'm not going to say you should automatically believe what he's saying, but, you know, give him a fair shake, you know, and if you think Maitreya might be the Antichrist or something like this, listen to him first before, you know, that's all I had to ask, you know, is just listen to him first and then make up your mind, and then you'll find yourself on whatever side you want. You know, I don't believe he's the Antichrist by any stretch of the imagination. I think he stands for the greatest good of all humanity. He stands for peace, which is what doesn't seem very far from what Jesus was talking about. So I would just say, if I'm going to promote anything, I would just say keep watching the TV. He's obviously doing more and more interviews, and he'll do more interviews in Japan and Europe and things like this. And, you know, by this time, you know, next year, hopefully, you know, most people have, you know, might have seen something. And one of the things that I wanted to do on the program is to inform, you know, a few people that, you know, just to keep looking for it. You know, maybe you can recognize him a little bit more, a little bit easier if you're aware that he's on TV. And he won't say he's Maitreya. He will never confirm it or deny it. He's just gonna think of himself as one of us. But he'll be speaking for the greatest good of all humanity. So that's it.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I hope you enjoyed this.
Thank you.
I mean, I want to have you back. I was very passionate today. I'm not even on my monthly. I don't know what it was that you were saying, but
I hope you enjoyed this, Gary. I did. I learned a lot. So, yeah, I would love to be on your show anytime, Goldie. This has been a pleasure. Thank you.
I love you. You know, big hugs to your daughter and your girl, your wife, and you're an amazing, amazing soul. Never, never doubt that you are a Christed being, Gary. You are definitely a Christed being. It's a pleasure always to have you. Share-international.org is Benjamin Krem's site where he channels and writes and sells his books. He's got a new book out. I haven't gotten it yet, but I'm going to. And I love you, everybody. Thank you so much for spending your Thursday night with me. It's been a pleasure. Gary, you rock. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'll talk to everybody soon. Take care. Well, I'll talk to everybody next week. Bye. Bye, Gary.